Good evening, and welcome to tonight's meeting of the Commonwealth Club of California. Find us on the internet at www.commonwealthclub.org. I am Ann Clark, a member of the club, representing the Environment and Natural Resources member-led forum. The program is also sponsored by our Arts member-led program forum. I will be your chair for this evening's program, The Magic of ODC, Transforming San Francisco Arts and the Environment. Tonight, we're very lucky to have five wonderful people who are going to talk about the program. And our moderator tonight, Carrie Schulman, is going to introduce you to our panel. Carrie is the Executive Grants Director of Grants for the Arts, City and County of San Francisco. Carrie?
Thank you so much.
Excuse me, it's Carrie, right?
Yes. Thank you so much, Anne, and thank you all for coming. This is really, really tremendous to be here on the eve of ODC's opening. And on our panel tonight, we have Brenda Way, the artistic director and founder, one of the founders of ODC San Francisco. We have Rob Bayless, who runs the theater at ODC. We have Lori Lacqua, who is the managing director of ODC. And we have David Baker, who is a citizen neighbor of ODC. And so I do a number of these panels, and it's so exciting to have an actual audience member, neighbor, real person, as I like to call them, on the panel. So I think it's going to be very, very lively. So what was the arts like before ODC? What was San Francisco arts like in the late 70s, early 80s? Well, Davie Symphony Hall opened in 1980. So before that, there was no Symphony Hall. The opera, the symphony, and the ballet all shared the opera house. Grants for the Arts, the program that I run, funded about 90 organizations. Now we fund 220. There was no ballet building. The De Young and the Asian Art Museum, you know, shared these dusty quarters in Golden Gate Park. And there were about three modern dance companies that had been around for more than two or three years, just a tiny handful of modern dance companies. And now there are dozens of small modern dance companies. And San Francisco is, of course, acknowledged as a real dance mecca, certainly in the U.S. and probably in the world. So what happened 30-ish years ago to bring about this transformation? Brenda Way brought what she called the Oberlin Dance Collective, or maybe she didn't even quite call it that then, to town. And suddenly we saw a sort of a burgeoning of the dance scene in the city. And it's probably just a coincidence, but I don't think so. I think that there was really something that was very important that happened around then that Brenda provided the catalyst for, and that ODC and provided the catalyst for, Brenda and her team. In real estate, of course, they say location, location, location. And because we're talking about a building, location, location, location actually makes sense for tonight's conversation also. But I think more importantly, in arts organizations, probably in any organization, what really makes a difference is leadership, leadership, leadership. What turns a dream into, or an idea into, an organization, and what turns an organization into an institution? There are a number of organizations that were founded about the same time as ODC, but only the tiniest number of them have built the assets of the organization and have achieved as much. So, in other words, Brenda, how did you get here, geographically, emotionally, artistically? Tell us. What's the secret?
Thank you, Carrie. When I was thinking about how I would explain the genesis of this company, I thought it was not what anybody imagines, which is a long-range plan. It is really an idea that you need to have happen today. It's an artistic need, an organizational need. And from the very beginning, that's how it developed. I saw at Oberlin, among my students, I was gainfully employed at the time with a pension plan. I remember that fondly. But I had very talented students at Oberlin, among them Kimi Okada and Katie Nelson, who are still with the company and with me. And I thought this would be a great group to work with. And I had just come from New York City, which had a lot of people working, a lot of artists and friends, but they were not doing the same kinds of things that I saw at Oberlin, which was influenced by the Conservatory of Music, and also by not being around New York. The press for a certain style was not present among students in the swamps of Ohio. I hope I'm not insulting anyone. In any case, I thought it would be a lively group, and it was. And when I was on sabbatical, I invited everybody to come with me. We had done a little touring in the first year of getting the company together, to come out to California. San Francisco was a very attractive idea for that sabbatical year, which stretched a bit, because it's a home of deep classicism, one of the first ballet companies in the country, and the home of a lot of radical departure. And that combination, since I'm a ballet-trained person, seemed a wonderful petri dish, really, for investigating what we could do artistically. And it was really about that. The first group that was called the Oberlin Dance Collective, it was the 60s, Carrie. Of course it was collective. included photographer, theater people, composers. I wouldn't accuse us of being able to dance. Kimi and I had a lot of training. Katie had a little bit. But it was really about inventing new forms and expressing what we thought was important to our lives at the time. When we got to San Francisco, it was true that it was a perfect moment. The sort of completely nonverbal era was just kind of coming to a close. So when we opened our first studio on Mississippi Street, we had an aesthetic seminar, and 28 people showed up to an aesthetic seminar. They were from Santa Cruz. They were scientists. They were all sorts of people. So it was the moment of change in California from the completely experiential to the much more rigorous. It was a shift. So our timing, I think, was perfect for who we were. So that's what drove us out here. And I will also say that some of us had boyfriends. I mean, it must be admitted. That worked out well, too.
So what did that first iteration look like? You had the photographer, you had the boyfriends, you had the people who couldn't dance.
Well, I shouldn't say they couldn't dance. I should say that we were changing the definition of what dance was. We could dance. You just might not have called it that.
Well, it does sound promising. But
what did it look like?
Something made ODC more than the sum of its parts.
Well, I think what was really critical in terms of development and longevity was that it was a collective, and everybody figured out how to do as many things as they could do. Some people were writing grants. That would be me. Other people set the program. Now, we were burdened by day-long collective logistics meetings, which we got over after a while. But in that process, tedious though it was, people learned a lot of skills. And I think that, therefore, it was never one person. It really was a team. And although I was by far the oldest, it was a mutual effort. People were... they had license to be their own leadership selves, and I think that made all the difference.
If you now ODC is such a it truly has institutionalized the core. There's the core company, which continues. She just made a face for our radio audience. there's the core company. You continue to do highly acclaimed seasons, which, and of course, they have now outgrown ODC and have outgrown ODC for a number of years, outgrown their own space, and now perform downtown at Yerba Buena. There's this extraordinary educational program. There's the theater program. Did this come to you all at once, or did these things sort of...
Well, actually, I would say full-blown from the head of Zeus. From the time we were at Oberlin, we had ideas about nurturing other artists. We had ideas about teaching. I mean, I was at a wonderful teaching institution. We had ideas about sharing. And I had kids. So I think all of the seeds of it were in place. The San Francisco Foundation gave us our first grant, and it was for all of those things. And our idea, plus a magazine, I forgot to mention, our idea was to throw the net very wide and to see what wiggled. And it, as it turned out, everything took. It was just the right time.
Timing is the secret of the universe, I
yes,
think.
Yes, timing, timing, timing.
And now, speaking of timing, I want to move on to Lori Lacqua, who has been with ODC for about 20 years and is the person who has to deal with things like planning and budgeting and...
Me.
Thank
Sorry.
You. And I wasn't going to say that, but yes. And Brenda having the idea that is fully formed from the head of Zeus... But you know what? It's not really fully formed. It's just an idea that's sort of out there, and then Lori gets to fully form it. So you've been the motor behind this incredible success. Where did you come from, and how did you land at this place at that time?
Well, I was a graduate student at the University of Virginia in the School of Architecture, studying architectural history. They have a pretty rigorous program, and we had to go through a lot of we had to go through the equivalent of 2 years of architecture studio, and then because I had overloaded on student loans, I was also working at the University of Virginia physical plant as a drafter and doing a lot of project management in a very small scale, things like handicap ramps on campus, spotting the asbestos in buildings that were going to be renovated. So it was this idea of that I had a lot of practical experience in an academic setting. I came out here to do my research, which is on Bernard Maybeck and the Fourth Dimension, and all of the documents are at the CED documents at University of California, Berkeley. And actually, Brenda's daughter was a classmate of mine at the University of Virginia, and she knew that I was coming out, and she said, well, why don't you look up my mom? I said, all right, why not? So I came out, and I did my research, and so I'm ABD, but I'm ABD. I ran out of funding, and Brenda said, well, can you write a grant? And I said, well, not very well, obviously. I've run out of funding. And so she said, well, would you like to write grants for me? I'll pay you $10 an hour. And I was like, yeah, sure, why not? I'd fallen in love with the Bay Area, but also had been swept up in the passion that I was seeing for the work that Brenda was doing. And so, you know, basically, I came from that background. I would say that the sort of pragmatic side of me was like, run away. Didn't have enough money to do that, so I stayed. And, you know, basically began working my way through ODC from a fundraising grant writing position and sort of worked my way up from the loading dock to the managing director position. And I think that it played a role in, obviously, the building of the institution, but taking on the architectural side of things was a somewhat of a natural thing, but I must have not looked busy one day, as in any nonprofit, and if you look like you have time on your hands, you get to take on the big projects. So I think that's how some of it happened as well.
The buildings are so extraordinary. How many people have seen have been to the ODC buildings? Most people. And that's why you're here, because you know how extraordinary they are. Now, those of you out in Radio Land, go to see these buildings. There's one on 17th at Shotwell, and there's one on Shotwell. Yeah. But they're amazing. I mean, they're just so welcoming and so accessible. And Lori, how did you manage to do that? I mean, I go into studios, theaters all the time that don't have that ambiance, that don't have that welcome. How did you work with the architects? How did you figure that out?
I think a lot of it is really boiling it down to the essence of what we wanted. I mean, there are certain needs that a dance space has, unobstructed space, special flooring, you know, sound system, blah, blah, blah. It has all those things. What we did, and this was very much in tandem with Brenda, was that we sat down and we said, what do we really want in this? And we wanted light, we wanted air, we wanted space. And so how could we take these and create a physical form out of those basic needs. And then it began to evolve that we wanted places where, for example, in the ODC Dance Commons on Shotwell Street, all of the studios have windows in the door so that you can see into the class, you can see the activity that's going on. So in addition to the practical letting light in, it allows people to see what's going on. We also wanted a place where people could gather. And so we began to build a program of our needs based on a day in the life of and a day in the ideal life of. And we put those things together and then worked with the architects. And if anybody's worked with architects, it's a lot of banging them over the head, but they come around to their senses eventually. And Mark's here, too, so I should be careful. But, basically we spent a lot of time going through that and encouraging them to watch A Day in the Life of and how do you do these things. We met with the dance community extensively about what they would like to see. We came up with the fantasy list of the best dance space in the world. And we really, a lot of it was very much in line with what we wanted as well. So those things began to boil down into the essence of what our spaces are. But I think the big thing about it is that this idea of community and idea of family really did form the resulting space that we achieved both in the Dance Commons and, as you will see in a couple of weeks, at the ODC Theater. And so I believe that this idea of places to gather, places to meet people, places to see people, places to be part of something, fortunately, we were able to achieve that architecturally in the flow, in the volumes of the spaces.
I think one of the most extraordinary things to me, seeing the Dance Commons particularly, and now the new building that's the new old building that's just about to open, is the number of spaces to gather, the number of places that really. Help groups intersect or individuals intersect with one another, sort of collide with one another and bounce off one another as they're going through. And the other thing is that it is so beautiful. There's just an aesthetic beauty behind the space that often gets lost. I mean, it's surprising to me that it does, because when artists build spaces, you would think that the first thing they would think about is beauty. But generally, the first thing that they think about is cost. Actually, but the second thing that they think about is utility. But it almost seems as if the ODC space has thought about beauty really right up there in one of the top priorities. And please jump in, Brenda.
One of the things that was very important to me was to create a space that really honored the commitment of being an artist. And we usually get the 5-story walk up with the big dust balls, and we don't get the salary, I might mention, and we don't get the stature in society that accrues to other professions. So to create a place that was beautiful was really honoring the huge sacrifices that artists make to take that life on.
I'm going to take a minute now to remind our radio audience that they're listening to the Commonwealth Club tonight and our wonderful presentation on the magic of ODC and San Francisco arts and neighborhood transformation.
At the beginning of this, I talked about the changes in the city from when ODC first landed here. But, Lori, what about changes in your neighborhood, in the Mission, that you've seen over the couple of decades?
Well, I think the Mission has become a less scary place. I think for a long time the image of the Mission was you just didn't want to go down there after sundown because, you know, terrible things happening in the street and whatnot. And our part of the Mission is really a mixed-use part. It's at 17th and Shotwell. There's on 17th Street, where the theater is located, there is mostly retail spaces or commercial spaces, some light industrial spaces. And then you turn the corner, and you're on a residential street. We are actually in an industrial buffer zone, zoning-wise, so there is a mixed use along the way. But Shotwell Street is the majority residential housing. So we have our building is in the middle of this. The ODC Dance Commons as a commercial space is in the middle of this. But it sort of exemplifies the mixed use of that space. And you really begin to see the way that the community interacts in a neighborhood kind of way. And I think that one of the things that has happened over time, people are less afraid to come down there. I do think, you know, pat ourselves on the back, that ODC has drawn a lot of people down there. It has demystified what the actual street life is like.
It's changed the street life.
It has changed the street life tremendously. Crime has gone down. There's the Neighborhood Beautification Project, which actually David and Jane Martin were key in, is cleaning up the street, having a pride of place. And I think all of those things, you see it block by block. There are some places that haven't achieved it in the same manner. There seem to be more open spaces and more of the commercial zones, but ours is of a mixed use, and it's really come around. And I think it's, I don't want to say gentrified, but it has enlivened in a very community neighborhood kind of way. It's an inviting place.
Well, that's a perfect segue to our actual neighbor, David Baker. And David, again, I want to really, really thank you for being here. Tell us about what you see ODC as a neighbor. Now, just to set the stage, again, working in City Hall, generally when somebody wants to build something in a neighborhood, something new, something different, something that hasn't been there before, it is not usually, let me say, embraced wholeheartedly by those neighbors. In fact, frequently neighbors find reasons why they would rather have that vacant lot just stay there, or that garage that's falling down, or whatever it was, for whatever reason. I mean, I think we're all, you know, really creatures of habit. But David, you like this space, love this space, love the neighborhood. Tell us from your standpoint.
Well,
like,
I'm not only a neighbor, but an architect, so I decided that I wouldn't be one of the people who was having the meltdown because something was changing. I actually, in the Dance Commons, there was a developer building some very volumetrically unchallenged housing there, which meant as big as possible. And I was kind of helping the planner, saying, well, you know, there's this wrong, this application, and managed to delay him for a long time. And then when he was getting really frustrated, we actually said, well, you know, you really ought to talk to the ODC Dance Commons. They're looking for ODC, they're looking for a space. So I'm going to take credit for finding the site. Maybe that's a little overstated.
Oh, take it, David.
Yeah, anyway. And also, you know,
they'll give it to you.
And I got rid of your parking requirement, too, which for neighbors, they usually want parking. And then I said, the architect didn't know that he didn't have to provide it because there's a phantom parking. So the building ended up with no parking.
Good.
So I get to take Pilates where the garage was going to be, which is always wonderful to see used besides storing vehicles. But yeah, you know, I think there's many things that have happened. Not the least, the police stings. They helped clean up the neighborhood a little bit too, and they're pretty diligent in that. So it's really nice.
Street theater.
Mm-hmm. Street theater. Yeah, I was actually. I won't even tell that story. But so it's had a fantastic impact over time, and it's one of the nicest blocks on Shotwell. People always comment on that.
So when, and you are not only a neighbor and a supporter, but you are that most rare and precious of individuals, a donor to ODC. What turned you, what made you decide to just actually make a contribution to this?
Well, part of my...
Besides Brenda's, you know...
Sure. I really enjoyed the dance theater and, you know, went a lot when it was open there. Beyond that, I wanted to engage, because I think that ODC has, over the years, engaged the neighborhood more, which I think is a really good thing, because it used to, I mean, it was 10 years ago, it wasn't only your imagination that it was scary at night. It was actually scary at night. It's a pretty incredible scene. And I think, you know, as ODC's come out and engaged the neighborhood, that's really, really helped. You know, it's that thing when you have a neighborhood that's not good, then people hide from it. And the only way you get it to be better is to not hide from it.
Mm-hmm. And you're an architect, so give us a little sense of how you feel about just the physical architecture of the building in your neighborhood.
Now, that's a dangerous question.
Oh, is it?
Well, I think it's really wonderful when people...
No, I think it's
hire good architects. Because no, and Mark is fantastic, and really the absolute has this. You know, it's rare to get an architect of that quality who won't bankrupt you as well. And I mean, the you know, it's a very tight budget, and he's done marvelous things with it. And I'm gonna, you know, not only am I happy about eliminating the parking, I'm really happy that the building's so big. So this shows I'm like the complete. Exception.
Not a typical San Francisco citizen.
And, you know, and it's so modern. So all those things are fantastic. It doesn't look like a rehashed dream of a Victorian that never existed, which a lot of neighborhood organizations really want to see. That's
great. Yeah, no, it is. It's architecturally so really wonderful. And I have to say the city did not make it easy because we never do. So the achievement is even that much more extraordinary because there were hurdles, which we won't go into because we're on the radio. But but just for all very good reasons, the city has extremely tight requirements about all building projects. And usually those work for the long term good. But when one is in the midst of trying to sort them out and trying to build something, sometimes the long term good can seem very, very far away given what the city requires. So ODC is really...
This is the Carrie Pollyanna moment.
ODC is to be commended for building something that's so extraordinary in spite of some of the challenges. But speaking of architecture and what's just about to open, ODC Theater, the original ODC Theater, was one of the first dance performances that I saw in San Francisco, the first small modern dance performances that I saw in San Francisco. Actually, I think it was the first in 1980, was at the ODC building. And most of you have been there, but I'll describe it for the radio audience. It was... A smallish space, though still very nice. Once again, that aesthetic eye that ODC has was in play even then in the very early days. But the most extraordinary thing about it was that there were these brick walls on both sides of the stage. And Brenda and Kimi and Katie's work is very, very physical and energetic. And dancers would run full throttle across the stage and your heart would just jump into your mouth because you were sure that they were just going to connect with that wall and their brains would be squashed like a cantaloupe. I mean, it was just really terrifying. And yet, it never happened, to my knowledge. And they really made it work. And the brick walls made it warm and inviting, even if a little scary. So, Rob, tell us about what the theater will be like now when you go back into it just all... spiffed up. Mm-hmm.
Spiffed up is an understatement. The brick walls are still there. Good news. We fought to keep those. They were trademarks of the visual, but also we felt they were one of those materials that had simply absorbed the spirit of every performer and every drop of sweat that had gone into making that space what it has become. And it was a really worthy investment. When you walk into the new space, that bit of familiarity is there, but also that history is there, and as well the attributes that it always lent, that warmth and that characteristic look. For those of you who are familiar with the space, which is many of you, you will notice that it's considerably taller and that the rake of the seating is much steeper. So the sight lines are vastly improved and the technical capacities are just through the roof. It's absolutely outfitted with all the bells and whistles of our modern aesthetics. So we can render just about any artistic vision in that space, which will be really terrific. Perhaps more mundane, the improvements to the HVAC and the bathrooms are also really significant.
grateful.
Not to be overlooked. No, no.
And what's your dream for programming this space? What can we expect to see?
What a great thing to get to live that dream. We are launching our inaugural season by really reflecting on our past and looking at what's gotten us where we are. The first thing we are doing is honoring the completion of our campus with a bit of turnabout is fair play in our organization, which is to say that the Theater for a Change commissioned Brenda to create a piece for our opening. And I believe that's the first time that's happened in the history of the organization. Usually it's the organization that's supporting the theater. So it was a great opportunity to have the ODC Dance Company and to bring in many, many guest artists, many returning artists, to work on the creation of this piece. So Brenda is directing the work, and with contributions from Katie and Kimi and many others. So that is the architecture of light, and that will open the theater on September 30th. And we then jump into a full community day of a marathon of all-day performances taking place in the middle of October. And we launch our season with Kunststoff and Levy Dance, who are two of our longtime resident companies, really been with us for the better part of a decade, and have since launched international careers on the shoulders of that relationship. So we're excited to invite them home and have them launch our season.
Yeah. I want to just ask all of you, Laurie and Rob and Brenda, to comment just a little more. One of the things that we haven't really, I think, paid quite enough attention to so far this evening, and there's really so much we're going to be leaving things out no matter what we do, is that nurturing of literally every other modern dancer in the city, every other modern dance company in the city, hundreds and hundreds of dancers and companies. Can you just say a little more about how you've done that and what your goal
was? Well, let me set the stage a little bit for it. My reason for leaving Oberlin is that we were a solo act, and my reason for coming to a city was to be part of a complex and stimulating environment. And the direct way to do that was to help make sure that was taking place around us. So supporting other people and nurturing their work was at the very base of why we moved to an urban center.
In the most practical application, the theater, one of the things that distinguishes us is we're certainly a contemporary performing arts presenter, which is sort of the generic description of what we're up to. But one of the things that distinguishes us is that we're in a very, very heavily programmed space when it comes to our service organization components. And I think one of the things that we're very committed to is the concept of residency, of really supporting the entire creative process and artistic life cycle, that we stay with artists over the long term. We also work with people towards their own success, and not just our own. I think we try to nurture an ecology in our community that is, we're interested in helping artists be as self-sustaining as possible, so that they're, fluent participants with what we're up to. So it's a big part of our philosophy. I think the final bit of that is that we like to define ourselves as both the chrysalis and the catapult, which is to say that we love to cocoon and nurture process, but we're also completely committed to launching that work out of our theater into other environments so that we're carrying forward the message of the process that goes on in our theater and that we get that as widespread as we possibly can. So those programs are kind of unusual within our theater. We have one nationwide and one statewide touring program that we run for our artists.
And what's your dream for this space? I mean, is there something that you would really like it to be known for? I mean, we've talked about nurturing, we've talked about new work, but if someone in New York, someone in Paris, someone in Chicago, when they think of the ODC, the theater component, what do you want to pop into their head? Brenda's giving him...
We had similar ideas.
Prompting him.
Similar ideas. I would say if there's one essential word is creativity, and it's innovation. That I think, is at the core. To get to those places, I'll give in to Brenda's word. To get to those places, you need to live as very consciously as an incubator. You need to be willing to take those things on that are coming to fruition. And I think ultimately, being a house of risk is another phrase that I've given our theater, and I really believe in it. I think that's who we are, and if I like us described, that's how.
The theater is such a gift to the city, not
just because it provides space for so many of our nomad dancers and dance artists, not just because it nurtures, you know, the very best of them, but also because it brings groups into the city that we wouldn't have the chance to see otherwise. Will you have a series for, you know, an imported series for us?
Yeah, our series, which is officially ODC Theater Presents, how original, is our curated series, and it will run about 22 weeks of the year, and it will comprise a mixture of a lot of regional and local work, but about 10 of those companies will be coming from outside the region. Most of those will be national, some international.
I think, you know, many of us who were around that long saw companies first at ODC that have become, Carol Armitage, for example, Iko and Como. I mean, you know, we saw them first at ODC, and I wish I could remember others, but, you know, there were so many that I've forgotten. But really having the chance to see really up close and personal, because the theater is very intimate, artists that now play you know, 3,000 seat halls across the country is just an extraordinary gift to the city. We have some wonderful questions from the audience. These are just fantastic questions. I wish I'd had these before, a little earlier, so that I could have asked them myself, as if they were mine. But I do want to get to some questions for the audience. I think it's about time for that, right, Anne?
Yes.
Good. So those scary brick walls, as I call them, and one audience member says, what makes ODC thrilling for me is that sense of fearlessness in the face of risk. And Rob just mentioned House of Risk, so this is absolutely on target. The sense of danger as an aesthetic challenge, a program philosophy that embraces danger, the wonder of the unknown, the surprising, the unexpected. This person is a fantastic writer. But there is a question. Can you address this concept as it impacts the organization's programming, philosophy, planning, et cetera, in all aspects? So this would be, how do you danger, the unexpected, and scariness in... Why don't you talk about that in your work for the company, Brenda?
Well, you know, I think really you make the work that you have in mind. If you are seeing things as fragile or on the edge, you respond by making work that speaks to that issue, which is a different thing from programming for the theater. I mean, when you make your own work, you are really speaking from a place that's not in in an articulate relationship to issues. It's responsive to them. And I, personally, about my own work, I think that we've been in such a time of change and sort of tumultuous behavioral oppositions that some of the risk that appears in the work really is my response to what I feel in vis-a-vis the world. But apropos programming, which I'll pass it over to you, but we have a couple of considerations. One of them is, if you have new and unusual and difficult, risky work, will anyone come? And how can we set up a place that makes it sufficiently enticing as a whole experience that you will risk it?
Go, Rob.
Isn't that true?
It's totally true.
Honestly, when you get to a certain point, when you get to my age, you make your work, and if they don't like it, that's the way it is. I have a few more minutes on this earth. I got to do what's in my mind. But when you're planning your season, mm-hmm. you try to mix and finesse an entry place for people.
Absolutely. I think apertures, points of entry, are absolutely critical. And my approach to curation has changed with every single season. I don't think I've done the same thing twice or been driven by the same idea twice. Sometimes because things worked out so well, I didn't want to do it again, and sometimes because they worked out so badly, I didn't want to admit it. But I think that the risk-taking piece of it is mutual between the curator and the artist, in the sense that Brenda's absolutely right. The work that is out there to be had is the work that the artist is making, and that's what's in the field. I tend to be driven in my selection process by fairly elaborate rubrics. And, you know, among my favorites are to reflect on the things that I believe are the most essential to the Bay Area. And a lot of what you'll see that I'm interested in or that we do reflects on what I think of as the four essential components of our lives here, which are that we live in an inherently beautiful place. It's intensely socially progressive. It's driven by values of innovation that lead it to a dynamism of booms and busts. And it's simply an unmatched diversity. So if I were to describe why I love living here and what I believe in about it, that's it essentially. And almost everything I do in my curation is drawn on some reflection on those values. And yeah, those ideas are scary.
Yeah. Well, and with that scariness and that risk and that and the element of danger, you have to, and you alluded to it a second ago, you have to be prepared to fail. One of the first one of my first conversations with Brenda, she said, she gave a little nursery rhyme, which is about planting seeds. And it's one for the pigeon, one for the crow, one to rot, and one to grow. So you have to plant four seeds in order to get one that grows. So what are the ones that rotted or that the crow got without...
We were just discussing if I was the pigeon or the crow.
without naming names, you know, tell us a little bit about what didn't work. Because I think when we see this, it's sort of like, as Brenda said earlier, it springs fully formed from the head of Zeus. But boy, along the way, over these three odd decades, some of them odder than others, I guess, there have been some things, almost four, well, gosh.
Three here.
Time flies when you're having a good time. Just didn't work, and what'd you learn?
You know, from an artistic point of view, I think every piece that isn't what you had in mind gives you seven things to work on in the next piece.
Now who's the Pollyanna?
I don't think that any piece of the stuff that we've done is a complete failure. I think things can not come together in a successful way. But it's all made up of people and moments, and I think there are always moments in everything that we've done that spring us to new places.
Speaking of moments...
I'm a mother. There's always something good in there.
This is just another reminder for our radio audience that you're listening to the Commonwealth Club of California and our wonderful program on the magic of ODC, transforming San Francisco arts and the environment. And Brenda?
There are actually two great questions here on rhythm and motion, which obviously people love about ODC. And that, speaking of taking a risk for a modern dance company to embrace what is essentially exercise, because many modern dance companies want people to take their classes and as exercise. So how did you come to embrace rhythm and motion?
Well, Carrie, it was the 60s. Everybody should dance. I mean, Consuela Faust, who started Rhythm and Motion, came in the same sort of crop that I did, which is that everyone has a place on the dance floor. And she went in that direction. She actually was also a choreographer, so she had an artistic part, and she brought the art to Rhythm and Motion. They composed their classes. It wasn't simply exercise. It was a dance that gave you exercise. So it was not a big stretch for me to think that would be a good partnership. When we opened the Commons, we had in mind expanding our curriculum to include more diverse classes. And when we spoke to Consuela, that would be Kimi and me primarily, and she was talking about perhaps moving the space and what was going to happen. The federal building was being built, and we developed this relationship. She really let us jumpstart an idea that we had for the Commons. So instead of waiting 3 years, the usual three-year ramp-up, within 2 weeks, we had everything that we had in mind for a three-year plan to develop curriculum. So it's not so far-fetched. I will say that the young people who worked in our organizations at the time of this fusion were a lot more unsettled than those of us who came into this with much vaster ideas of inclusion. You know, things moved away from that 60s ideas in the meantime. But I think the success of this joint program really gives testament to the fact that it's a good idea.
Lori, what was the scariest thing for you? We've talked about artistic scariness, but on the administrative side, on the fundraising side?
Of the whole deal?
Of the whole deal.
I think it still remains scary for me, is delivering on the promise, which is to be able to keep the doors open and always have that broad-based support so that we have places to turn when the time comes that we need the help. And fortunately, we do have an extraordinary board of directors, people who have been with us, some people on the board as long as 30 years, but I think the average 10 years, 10 plus years. We have an incredible donor base. So, you know, they do provide a safety net, but I still worry on a day-to-day basis about, you know, will we make it? Will we be able to deliver on this promise? Will we keep the doors open? Will we make our PG&E bill? So I always have to delve back into the sort of picky and stuff, but it is at that level, you know, ranging from the smallest of things to the larger things. The one thing that used to be scary but is no longer, because I think that the strength of the program has shown through, is that will people have a need for it? Will people have a place for it? Will people want it? And I do believe that is there, and that's what leads into my fear of being able to deliver.
That's I realize that now that we're well into and actually coming to the end of this program, that we didn't really recite the very impressive statistics about this program. Perhaps mm-hmm. we're assuming that people know more about it than they do. So, Lori, Rob, Brenda.
Brenda loves to spout them.
Brenda
do
loves
to spout them.
I really
do
it. Love
right.
numbers.
How many people, how many classes, how many
280
studios?
280 classes a week in a huge range of disciplines. That includes rhythm and motion and ODC school. 15,000 students over the course of a year. A children's program of about 500 kids. We have something like 25 faculty for just the children that goes through. We have a fantastic teen program now and intensive summer programs, which I'm enormously proud of. What other stats do we like? How many? I would give the number of performances that we had before the theater closed, but maybe you could give a...
When we reopen, we'll go back to our former operating model, which was a 48-week production year. Wherein we would have as many as 150 performance days, and I think over 60 individual groups come through in that amount of time, and roughly 1,100 employed artists.
150 different groups, different artists rented, Richard told me. Mm-hmm. The dance company has a 43-week contract. These are really phenomenally exciting numbers in between worrying about the PG&E bill.
Also an intimidating number.
Yes.
They're, and the buildings are quite green, speaking of PG&E. So presumably, had you not taken these green steps, it would be even more daunting.
Even worse, we would like to have taken more green steps, but it turns out you have to have quite a bit of money to be very green.
How about that? How many new studios?
Three new studios, one of which will double as a small performance space. And a dedicated theater. I think that is important to say that this theater is really dedicated to the creation and presentation of new art. The Commons is by and large dedicated to the school and to the rehearsal process of the company. But the new theater really is going to be about providing space, rental, and performance for our producing community.
And is there anything like this in the United States?
I've got to say no.
That's the right answer. No, there really isn't. For a modern dance company to do this is absolutely unprecedented and extraordinary. And it's a real campus. I mean, it's one building would be marvelous, but two buildings newly renovated is
this Oscar Wilde coming on?
Evidently.
So, Carrie, we actually have a little visual here
great.
That we, in our last 5 minutes here, can roll, and we can take you through what we've been through, what things looked like, and maybe talk through these a little bit. And if there's another question,
first renovation,
there we can.
Yeah. Us laying the floor. We did not have professionals. Finishing the building.
So, hang on, a little slower there, my friend.
So this is the model of the ODC Dance Commons before it went up. There were a few changes to it, but this is a bird's eye view from that.
Which used to be five separate little buildings, and we tore down all the back ones. They were little hovels. I thought they were quite charming, actually. But the front was saved and renovated into usable dance space.
There you go.
And this is one of the places where the back end was taken off, and we saved the two front buildings, the original buildings. so that we could build back to 100% coverage, but also to retain the character of the space. One of the things we were really interested in both spaces is that continuum of old and new and character, developing character. This is one of the studios. Each studio has its own look to it. This is the Fisher Family Studio with its nice pyramidal roof.
And what we're looking at for the radio audience is studios with beautiful wood beams, gorgeous floors, extraordinary skylights.
And our idea was to make every studio different so that, in fact, you could choose, according to what the aesthetic of the studio was like, where to make your work so that it wasn't a cookie-cutter environment.
And this is another studio. This is the Argyle Studio, which is primarily our ballet studio. And in the original building, there were some lovely wooden trusses. These are a very modern interpretation of those lovely little trusses. But we were able to bring that back in as the character of this space.
And that was also inspired by Jacob's Pillow, which had a barn-like environment, and I thought was a nice throwback to the history of modern dance in America.
And then in its final form.
Gorgeous.
And then the center of the ODC Dance Commons, or the physical center of it, is something that we call the town hall. And it's basically a large living room, but it's one of those gathering spaces that has worked extraordinarily well. People really do hang out there. There's wireless, so some people sit and type and are in their own little world. And others are in between classes or waiting for their children or sleeping on the couches, whatever it is. But this is the core, the hearth of the entire building.
And the Dance Injury Prevention Clinic, you see that little red thing on the right of the beam? There's a clinic that faces right onto the lobby and onto the town hall, and it's open every afternoon of the week. And they have a big commitment to keeping that door open so that this constituency that we serve, who is very doctor-averse, because they tell you, you'll be fine, just don't dance for 6 months. We don't like to hear that. But they've really made an aggressive attempt to connect and diversify the medical treatment that people get. And it's free.
Free.
And what we're looking at, again, for the radio listeners, is a picture of just a beautiful living room with an oriental rug, with very comfortable furniture, with end tables, with flowers, with just places that are so warm and welcoming to just hang out.
This is the facade of our building with the two older buildings on the street that were preserved, and now as it looks now. And it's an arty photo. As a transition to the ODC Theater building, this is just prior to the demolition. They'd taken the windows out. We're getting rid of it. You can see that the destruction began. There's just some...
One anecdote about this day was that when this giant chomper came and ate our building, we all lined up outside because we'd had several delays getting to... Thanks, City Hall. No, we had several delays getting to this demolition moment, and... it was such a relief when it finally happened, and it was very early in the morning, and all of us were out there on the street corner, like at least 11 or 12 of our staff, you know, with our coffee mugs and our bagels. And as that chomper started to eat the building, we all just started cheering. And the construction workers were so relieved because they thought we had come to pick it.
But I remember the mimosas. I don't remember the coffee.
And how many people donated to this building?
There were over 400 that donated to the ODC Dance Commons, and we're at about 425 that have donated to the ODC Theater.
And how much did it cost?
The ODC Theater is coming in around $7 million. The ODC Dance Commons were at $10
million. Those are big numbers, but the bang for the buck for this amount of money is huge. They look like vastly more expensive facilities to me, at least.
So in the original building on the Shotwell side, the annex, as it was called, because it was an empty lot when ODC purchased it, was at two stories, and it has now been built back to three stories. We had the airspace to do it, and we have a ballet mistress who demanded it. So we were
Augusta
able to get
Moore
two
is our ballet mistress.
Two additional studios out of it. And it's this is where I think Mark really... went to town and creating a lovely, open, modern space that is conjoined with the historic facade and the historic brick walls. That's just from the across the street as it comes together, as it looks today. And then in the studios, the third floor studios are just gems. They're really beautiful to get up there. You feel like you're, I wanted to dance, and I've never danced a step in my life.
So we're inside the old theater here at the beginning of the soil compaction and before the pour of the floor. This is the old rafter system and the original walls.
And the original brick walls you see here.
This is holding up the original brick walls as we dropped in the steel frame.
And now you can
frame.
See the height increase that happened right. from the top
so
of the
where
brick
the,
walls up.
Yeah, where the top of the bricks is from on up.
It's from 10 to 12, 14 feet, I think, higher, depending on where you are. It's interesting. Several people have commented as they walk in that it feels like a cathedral because you walk in kind of a narrow space and then you look up. It has a very Beaux-Arts explosion of volume and space. That's how it looks now without the cardboard on the trusses.
It's the seating going in.
Look at those seats.
Real
that's
seats.
Really new.
Real seats for real people.
This is our ODC Dance Company. Some promo for things that are coming up. The award show. It's a national project that's coming to ODC. This is a picture of a collaboration between Axis Dance Company and Ink Boat with Joe and John Renault. This is from the Rebetiko project, which will be Kunststoff's opening event at the theater in October. And an image from Raw Dance, some of our resident artists will be performing in February. Now, the best part about this, which you can't see,
can't quite read it.
Is that this was hung up in our general contractor's office right outside of that. They live in dumpsters, you know, right outside of your building while they're building it. And that little clip right there at the top says, to do.
So that's our lovely building that is about to open. Come down and see it, corner 17th and Shotwell.
Well, fortunately, we will all come down and see it. It's a wonderful building. Unfortunately, we have reached that time in our program when we just have comment time for a few comments as we close. And for our radio audience again, this is the Commonwealth Club of California and our program on the magic of ODC. So, Carrie?
So thank you all very, very much for coming, and thank you out there in Radio Land. I hope that all of you will go to the Dance Commons, will go to the website, and we will give the web address.
www.odcdance.org.
Odcdance, all one word, .org. You'll be able to see everything that's there and everything that's coming up, and you actually open formally to the public on October 1st.
October 1st,
with this extraordinary commissioned work that that Brenda has done, that has been commissioned by Brenda to do for the new
Wait.
Building. No, sorry.
Hey.
Commissioned by him.
Commissioned by you.
Of me.
Commissioned of you. Thank you. And you know, it really feels like a new era, and yet complete continuity with what's gone before. We're very, very lucky in San Francisco to have this. And
very lucky in San Francisco to have you too, Carrie.
Oh, bless your heart. And please go to ODC, but also go see things. Just go see things. Whatever it may be, wherever you are in the city, it's a Friday night, you're leaving the office, just go see something. Dance, theater, music. There's so much richness. And it's all there for you. And Anne, is that about it?
Yes.
Have we done it?
Our thanks, my thanks, and our thanks at the club to Brenda Way, Lori Lacqua, Rod Ballas, David Baker, and our excellent moderator, Carrie Shulman. Thank you so much. We also thank our, let's give them a big hand. We also thank our audiences here and on radio, television, and the Internet. I'm Ann Clark, and now this meeting of the Commonwealth Club of California, celebrating more than 107 years of enlightened discussion in the know, is officially adjourned.